This is Herb Montgomery, Director of Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Renewed Heart Ministries is a not-for-profit organization that is dedicated to helping people explore and understand the teachings of Jesus. Everything we do here is for free, even our seminars that we do in various venues. So if you'd like to help us keep doing what we do, I'll tell you how you can do that at the end of this podcast. For now, it's our hope that you will just simply enjoy this podcast as our gift to you. This week's title is Self-Affirming Nonviolent Resistance and the Cheek Defiance of Jesus for Women. Our feature text is going to be Matthew 5:39. And before we get into that, let me just say this week I'm on the road. Last week I was at Kinship Camp Meeting, had a wonderful time. I'll be writing more about that soon and the really cool things that happened there. This week I'm actually with my family. We left LA where Kinship's Camp Meeting was, and we traveled on to our heart group down here in Kapolei in on Oahu. And we'll be here for the rest of this week, and then we head back home next week. So you're going to pick up, there's going to be a little bit of ambient noise in this week's recording. We're recording on the road, and you can't always control all the variables there. So thank you for your patience and for putting up with the sound quality this week. But Matthew 5:39 says, is where Jesus says in Matthew's gospel, "If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also." And over the last few weeks, especially as I've been traveling around and listening to different voices and their responses to what's happened over the last few weeks, I've been confronted by yet another reminder of Christianity's failure to participate in Jesus's mission of liberation. Christians cannot participate in the liberation work of Christ while we are continuing to empower oppression. And what has brought this home in the last few weeks, this reality, home to me most painfully, bringing that to my attention, is the failure of my faith tradition in San Antonio to recognize and reject evils of sexism and veiled misogyny. The most appropriate place I know to turn in this podcast in response to what happened in San Antonio, and you can read, I'll put some links to what happened there and the decision to not allow divisions to ordain women as ministers. I'll put some links to that in the e-site. You can do your own research on that. But the most appropriate place I know to turn in response is the Jesus story. And Jesus and the stories about Jesus have much to say to women who are being subjugated by men. In his own culture, Jesus taught Jewish women how to respond to the evils of sexism around them. And Jesus saw these women as being made to believe that they were less than. And he taught them responses, including seizing the moral initiative, asserting and affirming their human dignity, and refusing to submit and accept an inferior position, and exposing the injustice of systems who perpetuate such evils. And because of how much we've domesticated the teachings of Jesus, we've made them so conventional, we rarely see the full scope of his message when we look at it in this context. But in order to help you see it this week, I want to recommend an extraordinary work, the work of Walter Wink in his book, Jesus and Nonviolence, A Third Way. It relates to women in a very specific way. And in this volume, Wink pulls back the veil of centuries of misunderstanding about nonviolence and highlights the cultural context of Jesus' teachings on nonviolence. Wink shows that Jesus taught his followers to assume moral authority and to choose to take on the consequences of resistance and assume that moral authority and choose. In Matthew 5, Jesus once again taught, "If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also." And as I've covered many times before, This phrase is often construed to mean that the slapped party simply submits to the person who strikes them, and nothing could be further from the original intent of the passage. The Jesus in Matthew abhors both passivity and violence, both extremes, as responses to evil, and so he offers instead this third alternative to the oppressed of his day. Jesus' concern for the oppressed you can find in Luke 4:18. There's some of that ambient noise. I'm so sorry for that this week. But let me read to you from Wink's reference of the Dead Sea Scrolls. This is from his book, Jesus and Nonviolence. In that society, the left hand was used only for unclean tasks. Even to gesture with the left hand at Qumran carried the penalty of exclusion and 10 days penance. The scenario Jesus is describing in Matthew 5 is not a fist fight. It's a slap, and it's meant as an insult with the intention not to injure, but to humiliate. It was a backhanded slap given with the right hand landing on the right cheek, if you can picture that in your head. And as Wink explains, that this was the kind of slap that would have been included and that men would have used against women to remind them to get back in their place. And he goes on to say, one normally did not strike a peer thus. If one did, the fine was exorbitant. 4 zuz was the fine for a blow to a peer with a fist. 400 zuz was the fine for backhanding him. But to an underling, there was no penalty whatsoever. In other words, you could strike someone who was underneath you, and there was no penalty at all. So in that time, a backhanded slap was the normal way of admonishing inferiors. Women were considered admonishable. They were considered inferiors. They were considered underlings. And husbands would backhand wives who got out of line. So Jesus is describing unequal relations within that society that would include unequal relations between genders. He's also describing interactions such as public stoning where retaliation would be suicidal. The obvious option for many women in Jesus's day to this relational culture was cowering submission. So Wink goes on. Wink says, why then does Jesus counsel these already humiliated people to turn the other cheek? Because this action robs the oppressor of the power to humiliate. The person who turns the other cheek is saying, in effect, try again. Your first blow failed to achieve its intended effect. I deny you the power to humiliate me. I am a human being just like you. Your status does not alter that fact. You cannot demean me. And remember, to strike someone with a closed fist on the left cheek, that was how men in that era struck their peers, their equals. So a man striking a woman on the left cheek, that man would be forced to recognize that the woman as his peer, as his equal, as his equivalent for him to be able to do that. I really want to encourage you this week to actually pick up a copy of Wink's excellent volume and read it for yourself. When you understand the context in which Jesus told his followers to engage what I call cheek defiance, it becomes clear that he was empowering them to do a whole host of things. And Wink, this is Wink's list, to seize the moral initiative, to find a creative alternative to violence, to assert their own humanity and dignity as a person, to meet force with ridicule and humor, to break the cycle of humiliation, to refuse to submit or to accept an inferior position, to expose the injustice of the system, to take control of the power dynamic, and to shame the oppressor into repentance, stand their ground, make the powers make decisions for which they are not prepared, recognize their own power, force the oppressor to see them in a new light, and deprive the oppressor of a situation where a show of force is ineffective. That's from the same volume, pages 186 through 187. And this option would require women to make serious choices and to do so freely for themselves. Each of us must decide whether we are willing to suffer rather than retaliate, whether we're willing to undergo the penalty for breaking unjust laws or unjust policies, to die to fear of the old order and its rules, and to seek the oppressor's transformation. Wink closes this with a profound statement. Wink says, nonviolence is not the final objective. Nonviolence is a lifestyle. The final objective is humanity. It is life. As a friend of mine recently wrote, Keisha McKenzie, and I'll put a link to her article where she writes about this in this week's eSight. But she stated in that article, healing the world is hard work. And I want to add to that, that if you think it's going to be easy, then just read how in Matthew 10, Jesus prepares his 12 to be misunderstood, to be feared, to be accused, and ultimately extirpated by the present status quo. After Jesus' cheek defiance in Matthew 5, Jesus addresses two more scenarios, the poor interacting with the rich, where we find his validation of public nudity as a form of nonviolent protest, and Jewish relations with Romans and the civil disobedience of going the second mile when the law stated it, you could only go one. But the very first example that Jesus gives is one where women could be empowered to affirm their worth and their dignity and to affirm themselves and to stand up to patriarchy and its abuses. In Jesus' new world, there are no more hierarchies. We're all siblings. We're all offspring of the same heart at the center of the universe. We are the trunk, or God is the trunk, and we are the branches. And we're going to have to learn to sit together around the same shared table as equals once again. But first, we must make a choice. Do we really want a world that is a shared table? Or will we keep striving to subordinate others or to submit to others' dominance? Now, understand this. When we value peace more than we value other people, the result is oppression. Peace or unity is not the fruit of submission. It's the presence of equity. It's people that matter, and peace is the result of caring about people. To place peace above people and their worth and their value, to just want to avoid conflict, that's dehumanizing to those that are being hurt by the present system. It's a shortcut to peace that is not genuine peace. And so Jesus' ultimate goal was peace on earth. Yet he spoke of being willing to stand up to the uplifted sword of our oppressors in creative ways that exposed the domination systems and awakened even those who empowered and drove those systems to also choose an alternative way. And yes, some of us, according to Jesus, may end up on a cross for shutting down the temples of our own day as a result of following Jesus. But we are not people of the cross. We are people of the resurrection. The hope of the empty tomb is that subordination will yield to equity. Condemnation will give way to compassion, fear to hope, and love to hate. This change, it won't happen by itself. Each one of us, both men and women, must choose this new world. And I want to be clear, as a man this week, I'm not telling women how they should respond to sexism or patriarchy in the world or in the church. Women within Christianity must be free to self-determine how they respond. I'm concerned by what I've witnessed, and that's men telling women to simply submit. And I'm offering the alternative that I believe Christ offered. Then that's the way of self-affirming, empowered, nonviolent resistance. I'll close this week with the words of Mahatma Gandhi. Nonviolence is not to be used ever as a shield of the coward. It is the weapon of the brave. Heart group application this week. This week, I want you to discuss with your heart group ways that you can apply Jesus' methods of nonviolent resistance to participate in Christ's work of liberation for the oppressed that he mentions in Luke 4:18. Number one, take time with your heart group to name some of the forms of oppression that each of you see around you first. And number two, make time to sit and to think of what Jesus' nonviolent resistance might look like if practiced in each of those oppressive contexts today. And then number three, make a decision. Are you only going to sit back and talk about oppression and resistance? Or are you going to choose, even if it comes at the price of a cross and a resurrection, Are you going to choose to embrace the options that you've just come up with? And if you're struggling with this week's reading, go back and reread Matthew chapter 10. And this is the chapter that I turn to when I'm afraid. It's the one that I turn to when my anxieties are high. And I recommend it to you in hopes that it will empower you as well. I recently received an email from a medical doctor who's a friend of mine who works around the globe to make a difference in the lives of the less privileged. And he said to me, "There are always dark nights of the soul in Gethsemane's, but stand strong. From what I've experienced in the last 11 years, monetary resources are no problem for God. It's human resources that are hard to come by. The harvest is ripe, but the workers are few. The financial support will come. Just keep going. The message you are bringing of nonviolence and of the real Jesus, of love for the marginalized, the least of these, is prophetic and needed in our time. But most prophets in the Bible got pretty rough treatment most of the time. And of course, just like I mentioned, Jesus had a pretty hard time of it too. Everyone is always so worried about whether things are safe or not. Newsflash, following Jesus is not safe. What you are doing is not safe. It's dangerous, but that is also part of following the Lamb. You may question, was it worth it to stand up for the few and lose the many that could have heard the message? But you have put your money where your mouth is, and in the end, you have no regrets. Keep going. Don't quit." This week, as we each choose to participate in the hard work of aligning our stories with the Jesus story itself, may the prayer of our hearts be, "I want Jesus to walk with me." He promised he would be with us till the end of the present age and until the dawning of the new world. And as some Adventists are saying this week, and it's a resurrection cry, you can't hold back the dawn. Till the only world that remains is a world free from oppression, a world where only love reigns. I love each one of you dearly. I'll see you next week. Thank you once again for listening to this podcast. As I said earlier, Renewed Heart Ministries is a not-for-profit organization that is dedicated to helping people explore and understand the teachings of Jesus. Everything we do here is for free. We don't make any money off of our seminars that we do in various local venues, and all of our resources are provided for free online. I have a hard time philosophically charging people money for that which I think Jesus gave to humanity for free. And so we take Jesus' words very seriously. Freely you've received, freely give. Even anything that we receive above our annual budget, we don't keep. We like to pass that on to other charities who are making a difference with the poor in this world. So if you'd like to support Renewed Heart Ministries and the work that we're doing in helping others encounter Jesus, please go to renewedheartministries.com. You can either you can go to renewedheartministries.com/donate, or if you go to just the website, you can click in the upper right the link there that says donate. You can make a one-time gift or become one of our monthly contributors. Every little bit helps. And for those of you who are already supporting us, with all of our hearts, we want to take this opportunity to say thank you. You're the one that's enabling us to share Jesus far and wide all around the globe. Thank you to each one of you for listening once again. As we like to say here at Renewed Heart Ministries, till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. Thank each one of you so much.